Hello and welcome to another episode of the Last Post Radio Show podcast series. You're with Greg T. Ross, and in keeping with our plans, our inevitability of having some wonderful guests on, today we introduce Di Morrissey, famed Australian author. Di, how are you?
I'm hanging in there, Greg. I think, yeah, it's been a very turbulent year one way or another. But, yes, I'm moving forward. I've started the next book.
Yes. Look, just touch on that. Do you mind talking about the death of your husband?
No. It was just such a shock. He was very fit and healthy, and one morning he sort of woke up and didn't know his name or where he was, and he had this massive brain tumor. And I've since learned, you know, it's just dreadful how brain cancer is so common, and particularly in children. I had no idea, and there's so little you can do about it unless you catch it early. And there's, you know, in his case, there were hardly any symptoms, so it was something of a shock. Because one was not prepared in any way, I had no idea this was coming. So he died in March, and so it's been a kind of a difficult year in many ways.
I guess so, and we've both been down that path, I suppose, separately. But I guess it's a big thing to take on board. You must have been it came as a shock, and I guess it found you hard to deal with, I guess.
Oh, well, yes, because it was such a shock. But he didn't, it was very drawn out. He was diagnosed out of the blue in October, and the doctors didn't think he'd, you know, even make Christmas. But he kind of hung in there till March. And, you know, sometimes he was very alert. He might have had a bit of short-term memory loss, but you know, the brain is an amazing thing, and I think we know so little about it. I mean, he had long-term memory, but then he found he could do things. All his languages, he spoke many languages, which he'd forgotten, but they all came back. And then he found he could write things down backwards and upside down, so that you know, I could read it when I'm sitting opposite him. These strange things happened. But he wasn't in pain. He was very frustrated. So it was kind of difficult. You know, and then he started to have little blackouts and fall. And so, you know, that was difficult. But my lovely son came out from America to stay with me and help me. And one morning he got up and then just blacked out and fell down, and he was gone from my life. So, very very difficult to deal with, because, you know, one is a bit unprepared, you know, unlike many illnesses. So, and really nothing that we could do about it. So, you know, it was very, 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 very minor symptoms.
Yes.
So that was a shock.
I think in Boris's case, obviously a sad loss, a loving loss for the family and yourself, most importantly. But there is that feeling of helplessness, and I guess a realization too, Di, that as much as we try, we can't control everything.
No, and I am a bit of a control freak. But, you know, my life has been turned upside down in big and little ways. So, you know, he helped me very much with the newspaper. He was my, you know, home support. He was a cinematographer, but he'd retired, and so he was the one that then went around and did the shopping and helped, and he just made my life wonderful. It was, you know, it was really very special. And we had some very good times, particularly when we went out, you know, researching books and things. I decided to do that opal book on the Opal Desert. And so when we researched, there was nowhere to stay out there. So we bought a motorhome. And then we were able to kind of travel around and go to some extraordinary places, because, you know, I go to a place where the book is set and I stay there for a month. And so we had many adventures.
Yeah, most important, and and bless that, and bless. I remember someone saying once, "Don't be sad that it's gone, but be happy, or at least appreciative that it ever happened." You know.
Yes, well, of course, you know, we had quite a romantic story in that I first met him when I was 15. He was my mother, who was a film director's cinematographer, and I was he was in he was 21, and I was 15 when Christmas came along, and I went to Mum's the Christmas party at the film studio, and he asked me to dance, and oh, I was totally, we were both totally starstruck with each other, but I was still at school. He was working. Anyway, one way and another, you know, we didn't cross paths for many decades until, you know, my mother would say, oh, I ran into Boris the other day. He's working in another studio. He's married. He's got kids and he's doing well, and bits and bobs like that. And then it ended up that, you know, I was divorced and I moved to Byron Bay. I thought if I didn't sit down and try and write a book, I'd never know if I could do it. So I moved to Byron Bay to start my first novel. And I sat there in a little shack on my own and wrote 9 books. And then 10 years later, I'm sitting there and I met this fellow at a dinner party, and I looked at him and I said, "Aren't you Boris's brother?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Oh, how's Boris?" And he said, "Boris is single." So divorced. So he was creating his lovely Croatian accent. So I said, "Give me his phone number." Then we had 25 wonderful years after that day.
Isn't that absolutely wonderful? And we talk of longevity, and we talk of a lot of things that are associated with you in the realm of respectful and appreciated and award-winning Australian writer. You've recently released, 30 novels, Di. It's an amazing effort. Riversong, tell us, it's got an amazing story. Tell us a bit about it.
Yes, well, 30 books in 33 years, I think, bit of a record. I didn't have a book when my mother died, and I didn't have a book during COVID, so that was where the gaps were. I was, you know, sitting up here, and I was, you know, I'm still, Boris wasn't that well, so, you know, I was unsure about where to go, and I thought, oh, well, I'll just set a book in where I live, which is this charming country town on the mid-north coast of New South Wales with the most magnificent Manning River. And so the river became kind of a strong part of the story, but it's basically four women in a country town that are all completely different ages, backgrounds, you know, social lives. So I thought, how would these four very different women meet? So I put them in a musical at the local theatre, and that's how they meet. So, you know, they're rehearsing the musical that's going on. So one day they buy a lottery ticket and they win just zillions of dollars of money.
The dream.
And then what happens after that?
Yeah, well, we won't spoil the readers, but I tell you what, it's a great storyline, and I suppose a lot of us associated with the fantasy or dream, at least, of winning the lottery too, Di, so well done.
Yeah, yes, it is, yeah.
Fig Tree River, the Manning Valley, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's where I was born, and, you know, my mother moved to Sydney when I was 5. It was post-war, you know, starting over with, you know, a new life, a new, you know, little girl, they had a couple of, you know, I was 9 when my father bought started a little water taxi ferry service down at Church Point at Pittwater, a very magical place outside Sydney on the northern end of the northern beaches. Tragically, my baby brother, who was 18 months old, fell overboard, and my father, there were only the two of them on the boat, dived in to save him, and they both drowned. And you know, I look back now, I think, how would I cope, you know, to lose your husband and a baby like that? And my mother was had never really worked, you know, and so she went from, you know, being a housewife to suddenly where you know, she ended up being a film director, which is a long, circuitous route. But there were these amazing people that lived down there at Pittwater, which at the time growing up I didn't think were particularly amazing. It was, you know, Uncle Chips, Rafferty, and
right,
Dorothea,
yes.
Dottie, Dorothea, that lived down the end of the bay, Dorothea McKellar.
Beautiful.
George Farwell, who was a writer. And I mean, it was one of those, it's very trendy and expensive now, but then it was very, you had to get a boat over to get to the house. It was very modest, and people had weekenders there, but there was a very tiny little community that lived there most of the time that were, these kind of artists and writers and things. So I thought everybody did that. So I thought that, growing up, you would do one of these things. And I told Dorothea that I made up my own stories because we couldn't afford a book every often. And so she told me very seriously to put them down, my stories down in a book for other people to read one day. So at age seven, that was the dream. But you don't leave school and become a novelist. And so, suddenly you wake up one morning and think, what am I doing? What happened to the dream? And if you have the courage or the stupidity, you leave the comfort zone and strike out. Because if you don't try, you never know.
No, that's exactly right. I think it sounds like a very bohemian atmosphere. And of course, I do remember when I was younger, I was a young teenager, and I went into what was then the employment CES or something like that. And they
All
said, "What do
right.
you want? What do you want to do?" And I'd had some experience as a journalist or a cadet journalist. And I said, "Oh, I want to be a storyteller or something like that." And the guy said to me, "No such animal. No
Yeah.
such animal." He only
No,
had
well,
a list of
exactly.
jobs on his card, and that didn't fit the description. So
No,
I can
no.
understand with your being amongst such a bohemian group.
Yes, I thought everybody wrote music, traveled, wrote books, painted, did all of these amazing things. To me, it was we're all given some kind of a gift. Then you go out and that's what you do for a living. But of course, it's not that simple. But I was sort of floundering when I left. I left school at 15, and I did my intermediate certificate. And Mum couldn't afford to send me to university. It was very expensive. Only the rich people went there in my day. But my uncle was an ABC foreign correspondent, and so Uncle Jim said, "Look, you don't just sit down and start writing books when you don't have skills, you don't know what you're doing, and look, you need to get a grasp on the world to find what you actually want to write about." And so he marched me into his mate that was a compositor on the Australian Consolidated Press, and I got a cadetship on the Woman's Weekly. Best thing that could ever have happened to me. There's another a girl who was 16 or 17 there, and we were cop you start out as a copy girl, which is making tea and running messages basically, and that was Ita Buttrose. And she left school, she didn't go to university. She came from a very well-to-do family, and her father was Charles Buttrose at the ABC, and but she knew what she wanted to do. So we were both there following a passion, and slipping. I was used to slip little wannabe stories under the news editor's door, Dorothy Drain, and they were the most extraordinary amount of women, inspiring, unbelievable women, and the girls like Ita that were all cadets, we were all there at the same time, have stayed lifelong friends. It was really a coming of age for me. And then when I did graduate as a journalist, I went and worked in London because you had to go to England then and prove yourself. Not, Australia didn't count in that those
That's
days.
right. That's right.
Yeah, and it was the best thing for writing that I could ever have done, and that's why I go to a place and walk around, sit in the pub and talk to people, and you sniff out stories about places, people. And I had never traveled around Australia. I'd never seen my own country, which is why I knew I had to write about my country and telling Australian stories, which was early on. Then there'd only been a couple, like big books like Thornbirds or. So I think my timing and luck is everything in the world as well. So, I was really lucky that I walked away at the right time and sat down and said, if I don't try now, I'll never know.
Well, we're glad you did, Di. I just think that it's an amazing, I have known your story for a number of years to a degree, but I continue to be mesmerized by the detail and the, I guess, the chance, the luck, the beauty of connecting with various people in your life that has helped you along the way. You've been a great spirit and continue to be. And you're great. I mean, you've got great descriptive prowess. I think there should be a film made about you, but that's another matter. We'll discuss that later. You wandered about Australia, haven't you, with great success and viewed the
Yes.
landscape.
When I mean, I have had, I mean, my, I'm getting a lot of nudges now to, write my autobiography, but you think, oh, I don't remember half it. I have to email my husband and go, where were we in 1982? I don't remember. Because I married an American diplomat and lived in all of these different countries, and then after, many years and to, young, growing, successful children at school and in the, living the dream life in with the embassy and servants and the best school, international school, and we're living in all these exotic places. Every 2 years we move country. But, then one morning you just wake up and go, whatever happened to the dream of the little girl to write books one day? And then you just know, if I don't try, I'll never know. But so, I came home to try. I had met Tom Keneally, who said, you have the disease, and if you don't try and never know, you will never be happy. So, that, and that's exactly true. So, I came home. My, kids were happy. They were going off to college. And, all alone, I rented a little shack in Byron Bay and sat down and, started writing. And that was, but of course, I had to make an income, and I got a job on Good Morning Australia when it was the first television show starting. But, I thought, oh, I'm in there at 3 a.m. and we're off air at 9 a.m. So then I'll go home and write a book. Well, I was the entertainment reporter, and I didn't get home because I was seeing shows, interviewing people, and showbiz people don't get up early. And so I get home late at night, and it was just then one morning again you wake up and go, oh my God, I've been doing this for 8 years. No, so I just quit, went to Byron Bay in a shack, and if I don't know, you've got to give it a go. So, that's what I did. But by then I had a lot of material because I'd traveled all around Australia filming stories and talking to people, like R.M. Williams, and you don't sit around the campfire with R.M. Williams in Longreach without, getting a few great anecdotes and stories. So,
How wonderful. How absolutely wonderful. I think one of the great things that resonates with your books is being able to look into the strength of communities and the blessing and strength of people working together. Attach that very much to your own community there in the Manning Valley with what was the Manning Community News. Tell us a little bit about that, Di.
Well, pardon me. When Boris and I were living in Byron Bay, and we drove down to the Manning Valley when I had decided to set a book here, and showing Boris my humble origins and all the rest of it. And he said, "Oh, we should be living here because Byron Bay was changing." So when we moved here, bought a house and settled here, within a couple of months, I realized that the local papers were not telling us anything that was actually really going on. And I just sort of said, man, we need an independent paper that's actually going to, reveal all of this. Someone said, well, you do it. And I thought I'd get all this help. But so to start an independent community newspaper with, because it was just after amalgamation, which was an absolute disaster down here, and, an uncommunicative council. And developers rule. They are ruining our country. The fact that all of this beautiful land, let alone what's happening in Sydney. So every time I watch the ABC news at night and see those anything in Sydney, and they show you these grey roofs with no greenery, no trees, not a blade of grass touching each other, and no backyards. And then developers are trying to do the same all over
Oh,
New
yes.
South Wales. It's terrible. It's terrible. So anyway, I raised my voice and made quite an impact. I was sued twice, but I got Four Corners on. I shared a story with Four Corners, and they did a story, so that got rid of one councillor. But anyway, It was, you know,
Eating. Yeah,
for
well
some
done.
strange reason, Greg, people were, businesses were very afraid to advertise with me. In fact, you were worried about their business. So, of course, I was paying for the paper myself. It was a monthly, but it was a big effort, but I know it was dearly respected and admired and copied, which is all good. But you know, I got to the when Boris died, and he was a very big part of the paper because it was a free newspaper, and the you know he, we Boris had got all of these retirees who used to drive the paper all over, you know, hundreds of miles, you know, here, there, and everywhere, because it went in every shop, every doctor's waiting rooms. It was everywhere, cafes and stuff. You know, and all of that. He was such a big part of it, and it just. I just knew my life was changing, and I couldn't keep on with
No.
the paper. So it is very sadly missed, as the you know the truth and the real behind the scenes information isn't getting out there. And this is happening all over our country. But yes, to have truthful, independent media, given everything that's happening on social media and everything else, where do we go to find the truth and the real story about what, you know, who can we trust? Where are we going?
No,
It's
that's right. That's right,
been
actually.
time,
And
actually.
yeah, no, that's right to die. And I think when you spoke earlier about reading a lot of media and hardly scratching beneath the veneer of what is being put up to the people, you do have to dig for the truth. And then you do have to know where to dig also, Di, of course, as you're aware, because there are a lot of misinformation, even amongst mainstream media, but obviously more so on
Yes,
social media. So you have to have good
totally.
outlets of news. And I know that your paper, the Manning Community News, was well
Community
read,
news.
and I used to receive it, obviously, each edition, and loved reading it there while I was having a martini. And just a beautiful piece of writing. And the truth, it's scary too, because it's important to have the truth. But then the reaction of that die.
Yes, well, it one good thing was that people, I mean, in one way for the community, when they could get no response, no communication, and finding dealing with council was just unbelievably too difficult, too hard, or uncaring, you know, everybody would come to me, which, you know, I tried to help as much as I can and could pass it on and be the middleman or, you know, help people or whatever. But I mean, that became, you know, a massive time eater as well. But I mean, when you hear some terrible stories, you know, you have to help. So, you know, where do people go when they don't have a voice that to speak for them? You know, and also to know who we can really trust. You know, the whole social media and internet with the kids, you know, where we're at the moment. It's very, very scary. I mean, God, let's not get started on what's happening in America, but we live in quite scary and dangerous times, I'm afraid. But it's interesting to, you know, when you look back over, you know, history, it's we've been there before, but you know, I think things get a little bit more dangerous. I mean, I look at my grandkids and just go, they're in another world. And I've tried all my life to make everything a better world, whether it's escaping through the book or revealing things in the newspaper. So
Yeah, your characters in your books always are attractive characters to read, because a lot of it is what I imagine the reader would like to imagine themselves as when put into a position. You certainly showed that with the Manning Community News. I guess underlining the importance of truth telling and making sure that people are held to account. I know that a lot of your paper, your publication, a lot of it was concerned with the environment too. Where are we at the moment with that, Di, and what are your fears and hopes for the future with the environment?
Oh, Look around. I mean, we are seriously on the cusp of we survive or we don't almost, you know. The last COP meeting between with countries, everybody seems to be going their own way. Money rules, politics rule. I mean, I'm desperate about logging in native in the forestry, native forest, because we are losing, I'm in a koala colony, and we're losing koalas at it's just it's tragic because of of development. Mining is a massive issue. Years back, I helped Tim Winton. He asked me if I'd go up and march to help save Ningaloo Reef, which we did. But it's now, I mean, if you read Tim's new book, I mean, where we are is in a very we're walking a very fine line. I mean, the weather, why, how can we not see what is happening around the world with floods and extraordinary weather becoming the norm? I mean, the floods and the fires that we have experienced. Look around the world. Ask yourself, why is this happening? So, and
Di,
it's
I am, yeah,
what I
Di,
can do.
I am constantly amazed at, I know that we are the prime species, but it's seemingly lack of intelligence and being able to consume the what is obvious. You speak of, well, more regular occurrence of severe storms, etc., flooding and the warming of the ocean. So it is there for us all to see, and you wonder how long this will be presented to the human race before things turn really bad.
Well, exactly. I mean, nuclear power, mining, fracking. In Australia, water is everything for us. To damage, artesian water bases, to lose or contaminate water will kill us all. I mean, water is everything, and it's just not being held, in the respect that and the safety that it should be. Food. Look how, I mean, when you look back at COVID, how isolated we were when you realize, when nothing could come in or go out. I mean, when I grew up, we made things. And I think we're either going to hit a point where we go all the way backwards and sort of have to start over and being very basic, or we flounder on, sinking in a mire of fire, flood, and famine. I mean,
No, that's right. And with the continual growth of cities, and I imagine in this instance, I'll use Melbourne as an example, the increase in truck transport and pollution of certain suburbs close to the city is getting to a tipping point, and where asthma and lung disease attendees of local hospitals hit an all-time high.
Well, look at what's happening in India. The Delhi's inhabitable. So I mean, other countries. And I mean, like, why haven't we ever got high-speed trains? Why aren't we, doing more to support ourselves and not just relying on importing everything China? God, I just
No, that's right.
I
And
said.
that's right. You spoke of the each country is going their different ways at the recent COP, and this is probably the base of the problem, Di, is the and I mean it's easy to understand the selfishness of nations being there to look after themselves, but on a wider scale, is the truth that if we don't all work together, it's almost bye-bye time, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's saying like saying to the Pacific Islanders and around the Solomons and all those Fiji and Tuvalu and everybody that oh, gee whiz, sorry, you're going to get flooded, and there's nowhere to go. You're just going to be run over by the rising seas, the contamination. I mean, the plastic in the ocean. I used to be the patron of the Whale Research Centre in Byron Bay years back, and I knew that the treasure that our seas have, are just our lifeline in many ways. So we just Just everything. It just seems like everything that that should be revered, our oceans, our forests, land, water, are just being trashed. Oh, I don't
Instead
know.
of, yeah,
My daughter
instead
will
of,
now
yeah.
say I sound like an old lady.
No, I think it's important to know that this is felt across the community. And I guess you talk about the importance of the ocean and of making sure that we have a sustainable future when there seems to be a lot of concentration on, I don't
Money
know,
rules.
yeah,
Money
TikTok and
rules.
cosmetics and stuff that's very, very,
But it's bigger than that. It is mining companies, the influence of people with m money that are using it in ways to just enrich themselves at the cost of demolishing our environment or the rest of our lives for the rest of it. I mean, yeah, it's just,
It's just
I
meant
don't know,
to put, yeah.
the wrong people are running the ship
That's right. We'll have to get
without
in
meaning
control
local
soon.
government, but I mean money rules around the world. And I mean, look at the appointments Mr. Trump is putting in. I mean, you see where they're going. I mean, I have children living in America and grandkids, and wow,
Yeah, it's a
it's going
scary
to be
thing. I think there will
interesting
be probably a
time.
lot of Americans coming up to live in Australia. That's my feeling. But that's just that. We did actually go up to the
Yes.
Ningaloo Reef recently too, Di, and saw the beauty of that. So I
Isn't it
would,
amazing?
yeah, totally. And the ancient valleys and gorges there that really give you a feeling of the bush tucker importance of the indigenous presence up there. So yeah. Di, look, it's
Yeah,
been a great pleasure.
oh, yeah, it's stunning.
We
Oh, lovely
love,
to talk to you again, Ross.
yeah, no,
Greg, I keep looking at
no, well, I think I'll change my name to Ross Ross and then it'll be easier. So
you.
that's
No, I've got my laptop and it's got Greg Ross in front of me and I kept looking at and Ross is in big letters.
that's right.
Oh,
Di
dear.
Morrissey, your
But it's
latest book, your,
congratulations on what you do too, Greg.
yeah, thank you.
You deserve a pat back what you do with your magazine with Last Post and everything you're doing. So we just need more of us.
Yes, indeed, that's right. That's a good note too to remember it by, and certainly a kindred spirit. Di Morrissey, 30th novel, River Song, about four women who win the lottery and everything changes. And what a great yarn that is. We've spoken about the environment, the freedom of the press, independence media, a whole lot of things. And of course, we could go on for a lot longer. And so, thank you for being a part of this Last Post radio show podcast
Oh, thank
series,
you, Greg,
Di.
for asking me. I hope we didn't rant too much.
No, you've been wonderful. Thanks again, Di.
Thank you, Greg. See you. Bye.
The Last Post radio show on Captivate, Apple, and Spotify.